And welcome to Rock Talk here on M88. I am your host, Yo. And thanks for joining me. Now, this week on M88, we're doing actually something kind of unique as graduation season is fast approaching. It's spring-like outside. Everyone's thinking about the summer vacation. But this week on M88, we want to help high schoolers think about what's next with their career plans. You know, you spend all this time in school, you know, regimented school, day in, day out. You go in to go to classes, the same thing over and over again. And then next thing you know, you're graduated. But what happens after high school's over? For a lot of people, it's college. For others, it's other adventures. And what we're going to do this week on M88 is kind of point you in some different directions that you can go when it comes to what you want to do after high school. Maybe if it's going on to college, maybe it's doing something like a missions trip, maybe it's going to a trade school, maybe it's going to school of ministry. And we're going to try and help you figure out some ways that you can go to college. We're going to talk about scholarships. We're going to talk about how to get hooked up with missions trips, short term, long term. We're going to talk about a lot of different stuff. But to kick this whole week off of talking about what's next in the life of a high schooler, we're going to first talk about how to stay Christian. How to stay Christian in college, how to stay Christian for life. Now, there's a lot of people who might be kind of surprised about that, so far as staying Christian for life. Is that really possible in today's day and age? Is that realistic to say that someone can stay Christian for life? Well, that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And you may remember, it wasn't too long ago, it was late last year where we did a Raw Talk where we talked about how 20-somethings were most prone to falling away from Jesus Christ. Once they hit the college age, once they go off to college, even if they've been active in a high school youth group, the numbers are astounding for how many will walk away from the Christian faith. And we kind of examined, you know, whose fault is that? Is it the fault of youth groups? Is it the fault of college groups? Is it the fault of anyone? Is it just something that happens and there's nothing we can do about it? Well, tonight we're going to kind of re-examine that from a different angle as we examine what a high schooler should do to prepare themselves for life after high school. One of our special guests is Jay. Jay, could you please pronounce your last name? Because I know I always get it wrong.
It's Bujiszewski.
I'll just call you Mr. B. How's that?
That's fine. You can say Mr. B, Dr. B, Professor B, whatever's convenient. Yeah, it looks like Bud Zuzuski.
Yeah, it's definitely a tongue twister for me. I don't know why. We've talked to you before. It wasn't too long ago where we had you on the morning show, right around the time when you first released your book, How to Stay Christian in College. And when we came back to this topic, and actually the whole week that we were going to be focusing here on M88 about what to do after high school, your name immediately jumped into my head. And I, for some reason, I can pronounce it well in my head, just not when I say it out loud. And I was really excited to have you back. So thank you so much for joining us again tonight. Tell everyone a little bit about yourself. Give them a little background so they can get familiar with you before we dive into tonight's show.
Sure. I was, I've written about how to stay Christian in college. One of the reasons for that is that when I went off to college, my faith was really blown away. I wasn't prepared at all. Mm-hmm. I had been raised in a Christian home. I really was a Christian, but I lost my faith rather quickly. It's partly from that experience and from having been brought back from it by the grace of God, and also partly because of dealing, what I've experienced in talking with my own students and talking with them through their own struggles, with faith in a very secular, very counter Christian environment that I've thought a lot about these issues. So when I lost my faith, I went pretty far out. You know, I was not only a practical atheist, but had lost confidence that there was any rational difference between good and evil. So God had to pull me an awful long way back and more or less put my mind back together.
Well, that is a familiar path for a lot of people that you've gone down. And so we're going to talk about some of the things that you experienced down that path. And it's something that a lot of people experience when they go off to college. So we'll get to that in just a moment. Also joining us tonight, Pastor Nelson Walker from the School of Ministry is joining us. Thank you so much, sir, for joining us tonight.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
And why don't you give a little bit of a background on yourself and a little bit on the School of Ministry real quick before we dive in.
Well, unlike Mr. B, I wasn't brought up in a Christian home, so I came from the other extreme until the Lord got a hold of me back in the 70s and went through growth, ups and downs, went through school, and eventually wound up with all the degrees that someone would have. And started working more with education because I found, as I went on the college campuses, I was shaken. And so I studied apologetics. I studied under some guys like Walter Martin and Josh McDowell and how to survive working out there. And I worked so many years out in the workforce. And how do you survive out there? How do you stay Christian out there? And so we put together a school of ministry here that actually helps in that regard.
And we'll talk about how school of ministry can help with that. We even have a former student, Jason, what's your last name?
Garcia.
Jason Garcia, I knew that.
Yeah.
Jason Garcia, former student from school of ministry, will lend some perspective on that. Oh, you're in.
Current student.
I'm sorry. I already had you graduated.
Hey, I'm almost there.
All right, very cool. Now, before we move on, I want to just relate a little bit about my background. I don't know if I've talked very much about myself on Raw Talk, but so far as this idea of staying Christian for life, you know, for the longest time, I had this weird idea that I didn't have a very good testimony. Because I go to youth events, I go to college events, and you hear some person, they get up and they talk about maybe they were raised in a Christian home, maybe they weren't, but they went through this time in their life where they experienced, you know, drug addiction, or, you know, they had, pornography addiction, or, you know, they had just bad friends, and or tragic things happened, people around them died, and all this, you know, horrible, horrible stuff. And then they talk about how God redeemed their life and how powerful God is, and I'd sit there and think, wow, what an amazing testimony. I don't have anything like that. Man, that's terrible. Because my testimony is basically I became a Christian at the age of 6 and have been a Christian ever since. Never experienced a serious time of backsliding. I'm not saying I lived a perfect Christian life. I had my dark moments as well. But there was never a moment where I was like, Christianity doesn't work, and I tried to live life on my own terms. I mean, that just never happened to me. Even in college, I was not put off by what happened in college. I found it actually quite intriguing and very challenging. And, you know, there were some tough moments, but I've never experienced that moment where I wanted to see how the other half lived. Well, finally, I realized it's kind of silly to wish that I would have a testimony where I go through a lot of pain and horror and suffering just to have a testimony like everyone else. In fact, I'm now very glad that God saved me and he became so solid in my life. I never had to experience all that type of stuff. And I can tell you, life is worth living without having to go through all that. Again, it's not that bad things haven't happened to me, but never to the point where I would say God was not big enough to be the one that I'd want to follow. So I'm not, you know, at the end of my life yet, but I can say that it's possible to stay Christian for 25 years and, I'm praying that I'll be able to stay Christian for another 25. Now, let's get this panel kicked off. What does it take, you know, if you're a graduating senior, or any person for that matter, what would you say they would need in order to stay Christian for life? Mr. B, why don't we start with you? What would you say to someone who's leaving high school, preparing for that next phase of their life? What would you tell them? Here are some things that you need to stay Christian for life.
The first thing that I always tell them is to remember that there's no such thing as a solitary Christian. A lot of young Christians leave high school and go off to college or to their first job, whatever it is that they're doing, and think to themselves, well, you know, I can be, it's all you and between you and me, God. I can be Christian all by myself. I don't need the fellowship of other Christians. I don't need to go to church. I don't need to worship. I can read the Bible by myself. I can pray by myself. I can do all that stuff by myself. And, you know, it's just not true. We were made by God's social beings, and the church is the body of Christ. We're really not just atoms bouncing around in a big bottle without much contact with each other. We're parts of a community. That's the way that our faith is intended to grow and stay strong. So that's the first thing. I always say, look for your Christian community. Look for the church and belong. Be active, not just a passive pew sitter.
And what about you, Pastor Walker? What would you say to someone who's leaving high school, or maybe like a new Christian? What would you tell them that they need to stay Christian for life?
Well, first of all, I wholeheartedly agree with what Mr. B just said. If you don't have your brothers and sisters holding you up, it's very difficult to maintain your own walk. Of course, I would add to that, there's self-discipline. That Christian walk is a combination of God working in you, but you also working things out through self-discipline, which is stay in the Bible, stay in prayer, stay in fellowship, which he just mentioned. but to maintain that priority where I am studying the Bible on a regular basis. I am reading devotionally. I am praying. I am doing the things. Even when my emotions might be contrary, I'm doing the things and making the time. I think what happens with Christianity is it often just gets squeezed out by the busyness of our schedule. And then we just start to, as we've untied the schedule, we just tend to drift. Mm-hmm. So we have to maintain that rope from the schedule to something solid, which is your daily devotional life.
Well, if you got questions about how to stay Christian for life, maybe you're a new Christian, maybe you're a Christian who's experiencing your freshman year in college and things are a little shaky, if you got some questions, you'd like some encouragement, by all means, you can call us, 505-338, what's the number? 505-338-5790. It's been a while since I've been here. I was sick and then I went skiing. And anyway, James called in. James, welcome to Raw Talk, and what do you have to say?
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
The comments that I wanted to make was, you know, to stay Christian for life is, it's a hard struggle at some points, but, you know, the only suggestion I have is that you just stay really involved in your church and your Bible, and you make sure you have those quiet times every morning, because, you know, there was a period of time in my life where, you know, I felt myself drifting away from God and everything, and I just got really persistent at having those quiet times with God. You know, an hour a day, just whether you just pray or just sit there and think about God or read the Bible or anything. And also just remember that, you know, in Romans 8, it tells us that, you know, nothing can separate us from the love of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And he also tells us that he'll never leave us nor forsake us. So it's all our choice. All we have to do is just, you know, say, yes, I believe in you and I want you in my life, and he'll never leave us, and we will be Christians for life, and our names will never be erased from the Lamb's Book of Life. It also says that in Revelation, you know. So just, you know, just to stay with your focus on God, you know, even if you slip away a little bit, just remember that God hasn't given up on you, and he's still holding on to you, and you are still a Christian.
Absolutely. That's good advice, James. Thanks so much for calling in tonight.
Yeah, no problem.
All right. Professor B, let me ask you. Oh, go ahead. What were you going
to
say?
Yes, I wanted to follow up on something that your caller just said. He made a very interesting remark that at a certain point, you know, he felt that he was drifting away from God, mm-hmm. but he held on to what he knew about God. That seems to me to be very important, because a lot of Christians try to base their spiritual lives on their spiritual feelings. Our relationship with God is not based on feelings, and the Holy Spirit is not a feeling. Sometimes, you know, our feelings may not be what we would like them to be or what they ought to be, and we need to plow on ahead. This is more a matter of what we know to be true in our minds and about the commitment of our wills. That's what's really important. So that if you're praying to God, for instance, and you just feel like he isn't there, pray anyway, mm-hmm. okay, and count on his grace to develop that spiritual muscle whereby we keep flexing.
Now, let me ask you, why do you think it is so common, and I'll get to you on this as well, Pastor Walker, in just a moment, but why do you think it's so common for Christians to experience that time of backsliding or rebellion or prodigalness or whatnot? Why is that so common, and why is it especially so common, do you think, in the college years?
Well, it's especially common in the college years for two reasons. One reason has to do with the fact that so many people, when they go off to college, are given this piece of advice. I think it's desperately wrong. People say, don't forget to find a place in your life for Christ. To find a place in your life for Christ. That the false note in that is that it leaves you in charge. It's all about fitting Christ into your life, your time, your plans. You let him have his place in them, but you still think you're yours. It's as though the building belongs to you, and you just let Jesus rent one of the units. You might say, oh, I get it. I shouldn't give Jesus Christ just a little place in my life. I should give him a big place. It's not that either. What he wants is your whole life.
Right.
He wants your whole life. That's one problem. The other problem is that oftentimes people in college, this is true actually at any point in life, right? We may do something that we know is disobedient to him. And now what happens is that we may not want to repent. We may not want to give up that particular clinging, attractive sin that we've glommed onto. And this creates a barrier between us and God. We start looking for reasons to believe that he doesn't exist, or reasons to push him away a little bit further, because if we're out of sync with his will, then the consciousness of his presence actually makes us uncomfortable. So what we have to do is be honest with ourselves when we do sin, confess, and return to him and receive his grace.
Now, what would you say, Pastor Walker? I mean, why is it so common for people's testimonies to have, oh, there's this time either before they were saved, or especially it seems often with people who are raised in a church or got saved, and there's this time when they, you know, fell away and then came back. Why is that so common? Why does it seem so hard for people to, once they commit to Christ, to stay committed to Christ?
Well, I think if you're growing up under the influence of a Christian home, Christian church, and fellowship, you have that peer support and that fellowship around you. When you get to college, everything changes. Your relationship to your parents, if you're living at home, changes because you're probably an adult now, 18 or older. Your relationship to your peers, your social network, your high school group, anything you might have been involved in, it all changes. And you drop yourself and immerse yourself in a culture that at best is morally neutral, but more often is opposed to the gospel. And many teachers, many of those who are the intelligent ones, will tell you Christianity is false and have all the various reasons. And so it makes you stand out to go against the tide. I picture this scene from the Bible. When Daniel and his friends, who were later named Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and the other hundreds of Jewish youth were all taken away captive to Babylon, in a sense, let's make a parallel, you're taken away to college. It says that Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself, and it goes on with the king's meat and things. And so here we are, years later, still reading about the mighty things God did with Daniel and his three friends, and yet the other hundreds are people who were brought up as good Jewish boys. In good Jewish homes, as soon as they were taken out of their culture and their home, they just decided to go along, get along, and little compromises led to big compromises, they disappeared. But those who walked in initially and said, I purpose in my heart, I will not defile myself, they're the ones who stood and God used greatly, not only to change that culture, but to have an effect for eternity. We still read of them today.
You know, I actually had a lot of inspiration from Daniel when I was in college. Now, Jason, you were kind of nodding when we're talking about this common thing of that time away from God. Why were you nodding for that?
Personally, I'm the I think the atypical kid that goes to college and completely falls away and goes opposite direction of how I was raised. I was raised in an incredible Christian home, but I think, and I work with the high schoolers now. I do a discipleship group on Monday. And one of the common things that I hear amongst the high schoolers now, something that I had, was there just wasn't knowledge of what is out there. There's a when I was raised, I was actually homeschooled for a little while and then put in school. But I was kind of kept sheltered a little bit, which isn't a bad thing. But I think sometimes when there's not a knowledge put out there, like these views are out there or this is out there, you know, whether it be for peer pressure and alcohol or sexual, you know, whatever that is, or even it just it's stuff we've learned this year in the apologetics part of it, what the colleges are saying now about Christianity, where they're coming at. I think if high schoolers, when they're going out, especially in a college, if they knew about that and were able to in some way combat that, whether it be with what they've talked about with groups to help you staying in your church, staying plugged in, or even just the knowledge of, hey, I know that's already out there, and when they come, it's not a new surprise, and you're not as curious about it.
You know, when I went to college, I was always kind of surprised, and please do not think that I'm bragging on myself at all. This is genuinely something I did not understand. You know, I was raised as a Christian, and I believed the Bible to be true. And then I had other friends who were like that. We go to college, a professor says something, oh, no, this science proves that the Bible's wrong. They're freaking out. How could this? I'd never heard this. But, you know, my attitude was like, no. The Bible is true. That is my belief. You have to prove to me beyond a shadow of a doubt that it's wrong. You have not demonstrated that yet. So let's get into it. You know, I didn't understand how it took like one small statement and their beliefs were shattered. I mean, even when I was like, wow, I don't know how to answer that. But my default belief is the Bible is true and God is God. And until you can prove it to me otherwise, I'm not going to buy into what you say. Now, just because I can't answer your one little statement here about science and evolution or whatever, I'm still not going down. But, you know, it seemed it didn't take very much. Now, Professor B, let me ask you, what can we do to better prepare, like Jason was saying, better prepare high schoolers or maybe incoming freshmen to face some of these things that they're going to face in college?
Well, there are several things here that are necessary. The first thing is, I have to say, most churches do not take the Christian education of adolescent students in high school very, very seriously. Mm-hmm. Often, you know, the assumption is, okay, they already know the Christian basics. They've heard all the Bible stories and all of that sort of thing. And so now let's just have some good fellowship to keep them from falling away. No. What's happening now is that for the first time, they're reaching the point where they're capable of actually grasping at an adult level some of the content of the faith, and we're still assuming that a child's faith is going to carry them. Well, that's a delaying tactic, and it may last for a little while, but it's not really going to work very well when they get to college. So is it enough just to, I agree that we need to say this is what's out there, these are some of the arguments that you're going to meet in college, but that's not enough, because you can't anticipate all of the arguments that you will meet in college. What you need is also some general intellectual training. This is what counts as an argument. This is what evidence looks like. If somebody reasons in such and such a way, that is a logical fallacy. You know, we don't present that sort of thing, so that if there is an unfamiliar argument that a student hears in college, he may not be able to recognize that the way that the argument has been presented is a fallacy. You know, I hear this even from my colleagues. Somebody came and gave a guest lecture at my university. We had to take the guest lecturer out to dinner afterward, and one of my colleagues, somehow or other, the subject got onto religion. One of my colleagues said, "As we now know, there is no life after death. As we now know, how do we know that?" You know, a little bit of logical training, a little bit of intellectual training will help students to understand that you can't just say something like that and wave your hands or pull it off by authority. You have to present the argument. There was no argument here at all. There was a fallacy of distraction. The person took it as though all intelligent people already somehow know this, so that the listener feels stupid for not already knowing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably one of the most important things.
Well, I guess maybe because I through high school and early college, I grew up as a writer. You know, that idea of structuring an argument kind of came second nature to me. Now, you guys were nodding emphatically as Professor B was talking about this. Obviously, this is something that you guys cover in school of ministry.
Oh, Professor B, thank you so much for saying that. My background, part of it is philosophy and logic. And one of the things I've done in the school of ministry is I teach apologetics, but apologetics comes in many different forms. You have cult apologetics where you're comparing Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons and things, and that's all fine, and I don't mind going there. However, I do worldview apologetics, and I'm looking at Jason because I remember him saying, "I can't believe this textbook. How are we going to do this?" And we start by spending almost a month just learning logic, how to reason, how to debate, how to define a proper argument, how to see fallacy. And then we walk through all the various areas and teach never to argue the particulars, always argue the premise. And we go through evolution, we go through ethics, we go through morals, we go through science. We hit all the topics, but now that we've had this background of logic, we teach how to do it, and we have these debates in class. And I'm looking at Jason saying, who's told me, he said, "I first looked at this stuff and didn't think I could do it." And he said, "But now we're debating it in class, and I got it. I understand this stuff." But it all came down to, without a foundation of logic and reason and being able to see through false arguments, it didn't work.
But Christianity is supposed to be all about faith. There's nothing in the Bible about Christianity is all about logic.
You're to love the Lord with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. God did not tell you to eject your mind. Christianity is the most reasonable of all conclusions in the field of logic and in science when you deal with probabilities, when you deal with evidences, and I teach it as such. I think I'm more of a scientist for believing in the scriptures than those who claim to be scientists who say the scriptures are not true, because at least I am consistent with the premises of science.
Yeah, I've always strongly disliked that concept that, you know, Christians aren't very good thinkers. They just kind of have that warm, fuzzy faith belief thing. And then, you know, if you were to engage a Christian in a serious discussion, they'll break down and cry like babies within a few minutes. Now, Jason, how has this impacted you in your Christian walk, learning all this stuff that Professor B and Pastor Walker have been talking about?
One of the things here at Calvary, I'm on staff here, we have the skate park, which is what we say about 95% of these kids that are coming in the skate park are non-believers. They are just skaters from around the city. And before, I used to chase the rabbit trail, you know, and I would fight if they said, you know, this certain point. I would argue that point alone. And one of the things that I've learned through just the apologetics, the campus apologetics, as we call it, is to really find the source of what they're saying. If they're saying, you know, that Jesus really didn't rise from the grave, well, are they really arguing that? Because do they have the proof, the science on that? No, what they're arguing is there's probably a loss there. There's something that we need to get to. And one of the things Nelson would always end class on is, after all this debating, we'd have 2 hours of debating and intense, you know, people going back and forth. And at the end, it comes down to this one thing, is that Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so. And that's something that I've been able to take. I've been able to use the, you know, ask questions, name your terms, you know, all these debatable things, you know, to take it to where they're hurting or what they're missing in their life and really find out how I can help them in that way, not necessarily just answering questions. Because if someone just wants to answer questions, well, you know what? I'm probably not the right person there, because I'm really going to try to lead you back to the cross every time. I'm not just there to answer questions.
Right. And, you know, that's great that you're learning that now. It's too bad we're not teaching this in high school youth groups. But that's a raw talk for another time. Actually, we did that raw talk not too long ago. Now, Professor B, let me ask you about staying Christian in college so far. As you know, you always hear, oh, there's a lot of peer pressure. There's all this, you know, freedom, and it's distracting. And what would your response be for either a new Christian who's in college, maybe they just accepted Christ and they're in college, or for these graduating seniors who will be moving on to college very soon? How would you respond to them about dealing with this whole change in how their life is structured and how they can make sure that they stay Christian for life, even through college?
Okay, you know, first, I'd just like to remark, I can hear you and I can hear Jason. I can't hear Pastor Walker, so maybe the producer can take care of that. But that's a very, very good question. There is a sort of a culture shock that many, not all, but many students experience when they get to college. One reason is that they're all alone. College means leaving behind their support network. You're leaving a lot of people behind going into a world of strangers. They're suddenly adult, and the college sends mixed messages about this. In some ways, the university or the college treats you like a child. And it does all sorts of things for you that an adult ought to be doing for himself. But in other ways, it treats you as totally mature and just leaves you on your own to make up your own decisions. A third problem is that, this is the one I guess that is best described as culture shock. Going to college can be like moving to Mars. People at college may talk differently, socialize differently, even eat differently, and colleges tend to be magnets for all sorts of strange ways of life. They attract people who aren't students, who aren't professors, who just sort of wander around to college and start doing odd things. Just to give you an idea of how odd this can be, at one school, campus feminists protested sex discrimination by marching into town topless. Take that, you sexist. At another school, homosexuals sponsored an outdoor kiss-in to win acceptance for their cause. I know of an art professor who lists on her resume that she tied herself to another artist with rope for a year. She says they never touched, but this was performance art. Another professor that I know of, this one in the social sciences, offers a course every year on creating your own reality. I'm not making this stuff up. So there is, there's a shock from all of this kind of thing. And I don't think that we do a very good job of preparing. You know, if you know that's coming, it's not so terrible. But if you're not expecting it, it can be very, very disorienting. So I don't think we do a very good job of preparing our students for that either. It's nothing to be terrified about. They just have to keep their feet on the ground. But people need to know that this is coming.
Well, you know, that actually sounds like a lot of my experiences at UNM then, some of the stuff that you went over. And again, like for me, it was like, wow, that's weird. Okay, whatever. And I just marched on to my own Christian beat, and I got many beat downs because of that. But, you know, I plowed through, and I didn't get why some people were so freaked out. Why do you think all of this is so frightening for Christians, especially in college? I mean, that was the one thing. Yeah. And I had some moments. I mean, I had an encounter with a professor where she was yelling in my face, and I got to tell you, I was scared to death. I mean, like, anytime you have a professor actually screaming at you, it's pretty scary. But still, yeah, you know,
because that's authority, right?
Right, yeah, but, you know, and I still wouldn't, not that I was, like, you know, being persecuted, like, you know, as the Inquisition or anything, but I still wouldn't renounce my belief. I was like, I'm sorry, you know, Jesus Christ is the only way to get to heaven. And she was so upset that I kept saying that, and I was like, you know, you can yell at me all you want, and I was terrified after that, but, you know, I refused to back down. What can we do to help kids deal with this idea of terror?
I think one of the things that we can do is discuss with our young people, our high school students who are getting ready to go off to college or out into broader life, how to talk with non-Christian friends and also with non-Christian teachers. There are, you know, sometimes somebody may have for you just a plain old question. Who is this guy, you know, who is this guy Jesus? Sometimes it may be an objection, and you have to present a solution, an answer, an intellectually honest answer to the intellectually honest objection. Sometimes, on the other hand, what you're getting from the other person is not intellectually honest. It's a smokescreen. It's a sort of a clever intellectual game that somebody is playing, and then what you have to do is blow away the smoke. That's different than just answering the question. Sometimes, if you don't recognize the difference between an objection and a smokescreen, you just get sucked into the game. With professors and sometimes with other people, there are some things that one can learn about how to deal with hostility too. For instance, I found that often if somebody gets very angry because of what you're saying, it's helpful to just say, "Oh, you know, it's very interesting. It's very interesting that you're so angry right now. You know, I'm not angry that you disagree with me, and I don't hate you. Why do you think that you're so angry with me?" Oftentimes they're a little bit taken aback and they calm down because it embarrasses them, and that can even be used as a sort of a turning point. They may look at themselves for the first time and say, "Why was I angry? Is there something irrational going on here? Might part of my reaction to Christianity not be based on the rational arguments and logical points that I thought that I had, but on some kind of irrational emotion? Maybe I better look at that a little bit more carefully." So there are some aspects to how to carry on a conversation, how to deal with hostility, how to blow away smoke when a question isn't an honest question but a smokescreen, and how to answer those questions that are honest, that we can prepare people to do and to deal with.
That had been good advice for when I was facing down that professor. I tell you what, all I was anxious to do was just get out of that office.
Can I back up you?
Yeah, go ahead.
There's another thing going on with your professor. You said that your professor was angry with you because you said that we needed Jesus Christ for salvation. Now, a large part of that has to do with one of the false understandings of the way that thinking works and the way that we find truth that goes on at the university. People think that if you know the truth about something, or if you believe that you know the truth about something, that what that does is it proves that you're intolerant. This is an enormous problem on campuses. People think that because Christianity says that that Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life, and that no man comes to the Father except by Him, that we're arrogant and intolerant, and that isn't true. You know, somebody says, "I'm more tolerant than you because I believe there are many ways to God." Well, yes, but he's not intolerant. He's not very tolerant about people who don't believe that there are many ways to God, right?
That's true.
It's, you know, the truth question, whether the claim is true, has to be dealt with first. And unless you know something about what is true, you can't even tell what behavior is tolerant and what isn't.
Yeah, and I certainly faced a lot of that when I was in college, I can tell you. Now, let's get practical here. Pastor Walker, let's talk a little bit about, okay, you're a high school senior. Maybe you're not so sure you're ready for college. And then there's this other thing, school of ministry. What is it that you think about school of ministry might be a good stepping stone towards college, and especially as a good stepping stone towards staying Christian for life?
Well, let me ask a question real quick. Mr. B, can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
All right. Okay, I was just making sure you could hear me so you didn't have dead air while I was talking
yes,
about this.
Thank you. I can hear you now. They fixed the problem.
All right. And we give two thumbs up to the guy on the other side of the glass, and here we go.
Yep.
I think it's to, when we go back to the question, SOM. There are some who are just ready to launch right into college. Maybe they have a scholarship or something, and to not go would be to lose it. And I don't want to in any way try to tell anybody what to do on that. But I found in my own life, when I first came to the Lord, I came out of a background, of course, that was not Christian. And I originally went to something like an SOM. It wasn't called that. It was another state way back in the 70s. And from there, I went to a regular college campus where I majored in philosophy. And that 1 year taught me one thing more than anything else. My teacher always used to say in the Bible college, it's not enough to know what you believe. You have to know why you believe it, and you have to be able to reason it through, which, of course, comes back to logic. And he was a philosophy major. And so I walked onto the college campus and faced some tremendous hostilities, especially from the language, English lit, and the philosophy people. And I knew why I believed what I believed. It wasn't just my belief system, but I knew why I believed it as opposed to something else, and I understood the logic and the reasoning. So with this school of ministry, I'm jumping ahead to now, we've set up the school of ministry where we have, we call it campus apologetics, it's technically worldview apologetics. We spend that time, along with, of course, New Testament, Old Testament, theology and things, teaching people to know what they believe and why they believe it and how to reason it through. A lot of practical conversation where we say, this is a college campus now, and we role play and we do things and we walk the people through the various objections. This is what you're going to hear in this. How do you go to the premise instead of the particular? How do you reason this faith through? And what I found is I've had many people come back to me and say, you know, I was going to college and I stepped out for a little bit and I came here, or I went here after high school and then I went to college. And when I got on the college campus, I knew what I was talking about. And all this stuff didn't shake me up. I knew it, and I was able to talk to other Christians. I became a leader. And then it was more a trial that strengthened my faith rather than something that shook my faith.
Right.
Because I'd already faced it in a laboratory setting. Now I was just facing it in the real world. So I see the school of ministry for those who are able to. Say, what I want to do is take 1 year to do one thing. I'm going to focus on Jesus. Not just know about him, but I'm going to just love on Jesus. I'm going to know him. I'm going to understand why I believe it. I'm going to understand why my faith, as opposed to somebody else's faith, or as opposed to no faith at all, I'm going to know why. And when they come out of the school of ministry with that type of confidence, 1 year of seeking Jesus, they turn out to be a leader. And whether that's on the college campus or the workforce, many people say it's 2-3 years later, I was still remembering, oh yeah, this is how it works. Because the school of ministry, it's been likened to drinking through a fire hose. You don't have time to absorb it all right away, but then you get out there and it all starts coming back.
That's very cool, and I wish I would have had an opportunity to go to something like a school of ministry myself. I think I kind of put myself through it with my voracious reading appetite and
probably
and whatnot between high school and college and while I was in college, and it was kind of a trial by fire for my experience. Now, Jason, you're going through it. Have you gone to college yet? Did you start college before you did school of ministry? Did you go into school of ministry right off high school? Why don't you testify a little bit about your experience?
No, I'm 27, almost 28 years old, so I'm not right out of high school, hopefully. I did go out of high school. I went straight into college. I was the first year they had the lottery scholarship here in New Mexico, and I abused that lottery scholarship and lost a lottery scholarship.
Like a lot of my roommates?
like many people, and I'm probably one of the reasons a lot of people can't get those scholarships back, because I was granted some gifts. But went to UNM. Just completely did not care about school, though. I really didn't know what I was going for, and that was my hardest thing, is I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. I eventually kind of got it down to I want to be a teacher, but by that time it was too late because I didn't have enough money to go to college. So then just continued life and got married, had two kids, and when coming back to the Lord, I just started growing and growing, but I just never had enough, and I really wanted to get complete understanding and when I raise my family, when I, if I decide to go back to school, what I decide to do in my future, I want it to be based firmly in what I believe and why I believe it, and that is God. And so, yeah, I've now gone to school ministry, and I can tell you, if I go back to college, it will be a breeze compared to school of ministry. One of the things they've set school of ministry up as is it's a little different from Bible college, I would even say, because Bible college is, again, knowledge, more book work, all that kind of thing. But the school of ministry at Calvary here is set up to be more of a life-changing type of year. Not only are we getting all the book work, all the reading, all the papers that we could do, we have practical time. We have practical ministry time per week. We have to do 5 hours to a ministry. We have weekend mission trips, and we have one long mission trip at the end of the year. We have a couple retreats, a lot of team builders, a lot of we have a garage sale coming up this weekend. It's just nonstop. Literally between now and June 1st, I have not one weekend where I'm not doing something either for my ministry or for school. So it's a real pressure cooker in that not only is it going to put the knowledge in your head, but it's also going to really just test you, really stretch you as far as you can possibly go. And again, when I say if you get back into the real world already having gone through that, it makes it really easy compared to what you've already done. So I am going to Shepherd School next year here at Calvary as well. So I may not go back to college, but again, compared to college, it's literally taking probably about 30 credit hours per semester. It's just shoved into that little time.
Let's scare everybody away.
Yeah. Sorry.
And everyone's thinking, college sounds good right about now. Now, Professor B, let me ask you, as we get towards the near the close of the program, you wrote the book, How to Stay Christian in College. Talk very practically some advice for that high school graduate who's thinking about college, thinking about maybe just, bumming around Europe for a year, or whatever it is they're going to do. But specifically for the ones that are going on to college, maybe are already freshmen in college, give them some practical advice on where they can go for help if they need help, or what they can look
sure.
for. Just give them some real easy stuff like, oh, I can do that.
Yes. Well, the first thing would be the one that I mentioned earlier. Remember that there's no such thing as a solitary Christian. You need to link up with Christian fellowship in two different ways. First of all, you need a real church off campus so that you're connected with other limbs in the body of Christ besides students. But second, you also need to be in touch with a student fellowship group on campus so that you're able to share your experiences and talk about your experiences with people who are going through the same things that you are and who share your faith. Second thing you can do is research the personality of the school that you're thinking about going to ahead of time to make sure that it's what it's cracked up to be and that you're choosing a good one. There really is a personality to a school, and it's not the same as what they say in their mission statement on their website. The third is to remember that it's normal to feel somewhat odd and homesick in any new place, and that such feelings normally pass. And even that a little bit of worldly homesickness can be spiritually good for you. It's a reminder that Christians are always strangers in this world because we're citizens of heaven. The last one is to keep up your spiritual disciplines. I mean daily prayer, frequent Bible study and worship, evangelism, service to others, and constantly reminding yourself of the presence of God. If you stay focused on Christ, He'll make even the desert bloom.
Now, let me ask you, because I've heard, and I don't have statistics right in front of me, and I know it's not as common, but is there really that much of a difference in going to, quote-unquote, a Bible college or a Christian college? I've still met people who have gone to those colleges and have had just as much trouble staying Christian.
Depends, yo. If you go to a school that is nominally Christian, but in fact has abandoned its Christian mission, and there are a lot of schools like that. As a matter of fact, sometimes at some schools that maybe two generations ago used to be Christian but aren't really anymore, the faculty are, if anything, more secular than their counterparts at schools that are not known for being Christian, because they feel like they're in a Christian ghetto and that they've got to prove to everybody that they're not really in it. So if you go to a school like that and it's not what it's cracked up to be, and you go into the classroom and here you think everything is going to be Christian, and the guy says, well, now let me tell you, the Bible is not the Word of God, and we know better than that now, or man is the result of a meaningless and purposeless process that did not have him in mind, or something like this, it's going to blow you away in a way that you wouldn't be blown away if you were at a secular school and were expecting that kind of thing. I think that one has to be realistic and face the fact that there are going to be some influences that try to pull you away from your faith, not only at schools that call themselves Christians sometimes, not only at secular schools, but also even at schools that pretend to be Christian, but that have lost their way. And there is no absolutely airtight, hermetically sealed environment that is going to preserve you from all ungodly influences. And God didn't promise that to us anyway. Yeah. So one just has to be aware of this fact.
Well, let me ask you, Pastor Walker, as we sort of wrap things up, what would you say is perhaps the number one danger stumbling block for people staying Christian for life? And how is going to something like school ministry able to counteract that?
Well, I wish I knew the answer to that question. The number one, it's going to come down to the foundation, something very, very simple. And that is, how is my devotional life with the Lord? And by devotional life, I'm not talking about warm fuzzies and warm feelings. It is he still my first love? Am I focused on him? Am I doing everything to the glory of God? And whatever I do in word or deed, always to the glory of God. Is he my priority in life? Or is it that other person I'm looking at? Or they're my priority? Am I pursuing them instead of this? Am I pursuing the grade instead of the knowledge that I might grow in him? So it's to maintain the priority. Why am I doing what I'm doing? It's because I want to love the Lord. He loved me. And in response, I love him. And it's to maintain that. And it's that careful, difficult balance between knowing the Lord's going to see me through, but knowing that the Lord also requires me to open the Bible and read it. Knowing that the Lord is working all things together for good, but knowing that the Lord also tells me that I need to take time and pray. Knowing that the Lord has a plan, but knowing that he has called on me to act in certain ways and not act in other ways. So it's this careful balance of growth. So how do I maintain Christianity? It's know why I believe what I believe. It's not enough to know what. And then to maintain that daily communication with God. And of course, the basic principles are fellowship, prayer, worship, study of the word. Maintain those disciplines in my life and be transparent. Don't compromise. It is easy to play the game externally and not be there internally. Maintain that purity before God and maintain the disciplines, not as something to impress people, but because I'm seeking the Lord. And if I do that, I'll remain a Christian.
Amen. Now, Jason, how would you say doing something like school of ministry has prepared you, hopefully, to stay committed to Christ for life?
It, as Nelson said, it's a foundation. One of the things you notice in school of ministry, if you're not right inside, it will point it out to you really, really quickly. And it will also show you not only that you're wrong, but how to get right. And I think that's one of the things I have through, whether it be the apologetics classes to know how to defend the faith, whether it be through theology, just what I believe. What do I personally take away from it? It has completely set a foundation to where I just can't be shaken. It's now I completely know what I believe, why I believe it, and I can tell people about that. And more importantly for myself, I can raise my family like that. I can share that with my wife. I can share that with my two kids and the one on the way. But I can also share that with my ministry. And that's, you know, like I said, it's the high school ministry. And that's the major thing. I was put in this high school ministry, and I've been able to – it's amazing how God works. Something that we'll study 1 week – I mean, literally that day on a Monday about theology or some questions came up in apologetics. When I have that discipleship with them that night, for some reason those kids are asking me that same question, a question I haven't been asked in my whole 27 years. All of a sudden God puts it in my class and on their heart at the same time, and I'm able to answer those questions. And it's great to know that I have been equipped to share God with them, and that I can share that with my family or my ministry.
So you think you'll be able to face any trial that may come?
Even without school or ministry, as long as you're right with God and you just love God, you can face any trial.
Now, Professor B, let me ask you, like I alluded to at the beginning of the program, for some reason, that 20-something age group is so crucial when it comes to staying Christian because, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but it's upwards of two-thirds find themselves falling away in college even after being active in a high school youth group. Well, what do you think is the benefit? I mean, if someone can actually stay Christian through college, how is that going to benefit their lives?
Well, let's think about it this way. You know, a child's fundamental personality is formed probably mostly in those first 6 or 7 years, and our spiritual personality is formed pretty early in life too. We have more plasticity. We have more tendency and capacity for change and development when we're young than at any other point. Just like the shape of the tree is going to be much more influenced by the training that young branch has when it's still green than later on when it's a big old oak and it's pretty stiff. So it is the same with us. It really makes a difference what happens in college. Let's take it as a given then that God wants to dust you off, clean you up, mold you, teach you, shape your character, and make you a gleaming mirror of his glory. We have to not ask anymore where God fits in your plan for college, but where college fits in God's plan for your life.
Well, Professor B, thank you so much for taking the time out that you did to join us tonight. Now, I know the book, How to Stay Christian in College, actually came out like a year and a half or so ago, but it's still available, yeah?
Oh, absolutely, yes. You can go to the Nav Press website, or you can get it from Amazon or any of those online booksellers. You can go to your local Christian bookstore if they don't have it. You can tell them the title and ask them to order it. It's easy to get.
All right. Well, Professor B, hang on. I'll talk with you just a little bit more after the program wraps up here in just a moment. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, sir.
Well, I've been glad to be with you, and glad to talk too with the pastor and with Jason.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And Pastor Walker, why don't you tell people if they're interested in the school of ministry, if tonight's program is I need that foundation, maybe for college, maybe just for life. Where would they go to learn more about school of ministry?
Well, if people were interested in the school of ministry, I'd say call the church here. It's area code 505-344-0880. And there's plenty of information that it's on the web at calvaryabq.org. They can send information, brochures, flyers, pamphlets. They can talk to somebody if they call and they want to talk to someone. We also have something coming up that we call SOM Student for a Day. It's actually a whole week that anybody who might be interested, they can attend the classes. There's no cost. There's no obligation. But it's the opportunity to come and sit in on the various classes, talk to the various teachers, listen to the lectures, and see. So if they want more information, the web, Calvary ABQ, the phone, same thing, the Calvary Albuquerque website, or if they wanted to even have an opportunity to experience the classes, that is upcoming, and they can get that information.
I've actually had a chance to sit in on some of the classes, and I can say I really enjoyed them, so I hope people take advantage of that. And Jason, do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to share with people about how to stay Christian for life, how what you've experienced has helped you with that and perhaps might help other people?
I just think it was said a minute ago, it's not where college where college fits in with your plan, but it's more where God has college fitting in. And you know what? Don't be afraid if God has put it on your heart to go to a school or ministry or even a Bible college. Do not be afraid to lose, let's say, the lottery scholarship or something like that, because personally, where God puts you, He'll provide for you there. And you know, I can tell you from my personal experience that God put it in my heart for school of ministry, and I do not make enough money to pay for it. But God has blessed me with people and just activities to take care of that. So, again, if it's in your heart, don't be afraid of it. Just go to where it's calling you.
Well, I want to thank you guys again for joining me tonight. And let me just say, you know, if you've been listening and Perhaps you've already gone to college and you're freaking out, man, because they're telling you stuff you never thought you'd ever hear before. Like, they have proof that the Bible isn't real or any of that type of stuff. They found the tomb of Jesus or things of that nature, and you just don't know how to respond. Well, you know what? There's people who have gone through that who can help you out. You can find encouragement. I went through the trials of college without the benefit of a school of ministry, and I came out just fine. I mean, I had my rough days, but you know what? Pastor Walker is questioning whether I came out just fine. But I had my rough days, and yet, you know, I found a way to persevere. Why? Because of one thing. Like Pastor Walker pointed out, like Professor B pointed out, if you know what you believe and why you believe it, you can stand tall. You know, I just saw this movie 300, and I'm not by any means recommending this movie to anyone. But I did like the inspiration of the 300 Spartans standing against an army of a million or more. You know, anyone would see that and they say, against those odds, you're stupid to stand. And in the movie, you know, the head of that army, Xerxes, even says, you know, all I'm asking you to do is kneel. That's all. You know, you're telling these men to stand. All I'm asking you to do is kneel. It won't cost you anything. I'll give you riches. I'll give you wealth. I'll give you pleasure. I'm just asking you to kneel. And yet those 300 Spartans stood, and it cost them their lives. Well, so often that's what the Christian life is like. We face overwhelming odds, and sometimes when you're in college, it can feel like everyone on the campus is against you personally. I had some days like that, and, you know, it'd be real easy. You know, if I just kneel, then I won't be making waves anymore, and I won't have to argue with professors, and I won't have to answer all these questions from, you know, people in my dorm. But you know what? When you kneel, it's going to cost you more than you can afford. I can guarantee you that. I've seen it in so many people's lives. So be encouraged. You can stay Christian for life. It is possible. In fact, it's quite glorious. And the best part of it is, if we stay Christian for life, there's an eternal reward for us that far outweighs anything this world has to offer. And that is something that is definitely worth standing for. So I hope you'll be encouraged. If you have questions, if you want some encouragement, you'd like some help, you can always email us at studio@m88.org. Maybe listening to this, you decide maybe being a Christian isn't such a bad idea after all. Well, we could certainly talk to you about that, and we'd love to hear from you. Again, studio@m88.org. Well, that's going to wrap up tonight's Raw Talk. Next week is going to be kind of interesting as we talk about should we celebrate Lent? We're going to have a special guest as we talk a little bit about the background of the Lenten celebration and whether or not that's something that Christians should really be a part of. I know some of you are thinking, that's a no-brainer. Well, it's going to be interesting, I can tell you that much. So be sure to join us next week, and then the week after that is going to be a special treat as we talk about the historicity of the resurrection. Yeah, there's actually historical evidence for that, and we're going to talk about that on Raw Talk. So the next 2 weeks, sure to be intriguing. I hope you'll be joining us for those programs. Thanks so much for joining us tonight here on Raw Talk on M88.